Yesterday we discussed about the jnana's attributes of jnana, 13.8 to 12. Now, as I mentioned, this chapter is answering those six questions of Arjuna. So, started with kshetra and kshetrajna. Then it is going to describe jnana and jnana. So, jnana is that which is to be known. So, that will be described in the next seven verses, 13.13 to 13.19. So let's have a look at this. Gayam yattat pravakshami. Yajnatvamrutam ashnute. Anadimat param brahma. Nasattanna saduchyate. Geyam yattat pravakshami. Pravakshami means to explain or to speak. I will speak to you that which is the object of knowledge. Geyam. And what is the result of this? Yajnatva amrutam shnute. So one will attain immortality, the state beyond mrityu, amrutam. And he starts by describing anadi matparam brahma. So anadi is beginningless. Then this Brahma, which is one of the things to be known, it is matparam. It is dependent on me. And na sat tanna saduchyate. So sat asad can mean various things. It can mean temporary, eternal. It can mean cause and effect. So Krishna has earlier also said in the 9th chapter, when he has been talking about how he is the sacrifice, he says, I am Sad Asad. What is that verse? Sadasa Chaham Arjuna. How does it start? 9.18, I think. Sadasa Chaham Uchyate Amritam Jaiva Mrityuscha. Sadasa Chaham Uchyate Tapamyaham Aham Varsham Visrajami Nigrhanami Cha Amritam Jaiva Mrityuscha. Sadasachaham Arjuna Maham Varsham Nigranami Utsujamicha Amrutam Chaiva Mrityuscha Sadasachaham Arjuna. So, this is 9.19. Sad Asad Chaham. So, Krishna is telling that I am Sad, I am Asad. So, although the words are same, they do not necessarily mean the same thing. When Krishna is saying, I am Sat and I am Asat, that means he is saying over here that it depends on what Sat and Asat refers to. This is a matter of elaborate discussion among the Acharyas. So Prabhupada says that Sat and Asat refer to spirit and matter, which is fine in the sense that spirit is eternal. And we say that the body is Satchitananda, the soul is Satchitananda, the body is Asatachit Nirananda. So Sat Asat Chaham Arjuna. So in what sense is Krishna Sat Asat? Now if you look at it, it's clearly not a directly full identification. It's not that Krishna is heat and Krishna is light and Krishna is sun. Krishna is the ultimate cause of all these things. So similarly, when he's saying Sadasat Chaham Arjuna, what he means is that spirit and matter are ultimately his energies. So this when Krishna is saying I am all these, he's talking more in terms of how he is the underlying cause of which all these are the effects. All these are the manifestations. But in the process of jnana, which we are discussing now, the bhakti involves seeing the connection of everything with God. Whereas the process of jnana essentially centers on focusing on the disconnection between matter and spirit. Matter has to be rejected and spirit has to be accepted. So this theme is common to all spiritual paths. Is in the Upanishad, it is asatoma sadgamayo. So go from the temporary to the eternal. Mrityuma amritam gamayo. So like that is a common theme. But what is the means to go from asatoma asata? So in bhakti, it is used the asata as a means to get to the sata. So when we see the whole world as Krishna Maya, I see that Prabhupada would say that this mic because it is being used for Krishna's service, so it is spiritual. That is one way of looking at things. And it is much more practical in the sense that we can use things of this world in Krishna's service much more easily than to completely renounce everything and to think of spirit which is invisible and unmanifest and practically inaccessible to most of us. But in the jnana section, that jnana path, that is the process. That's why when Krishna is focusing on the talking about Brahma here, he will say, Nasattanna saduchyate. That Brahma has got nothing that had nothing to do with sata and asat. So it is not a contradiction, it depends on the context. And to make things clearer for us, so sat and asat, Prabhupada explains, it refers to the cause and effect in this world. So now in one place the rain showers and there are huge floods. In another place the rains don't come and there are droughts. So now, in his ultimate sense, if we see, Krishna is beyond both. Now, Krishna has got nothing to do with the rains, Krishna has got nothing to do with the droughts. He is actually beyond both. He is beyond both. So, you know, sometimes we may use a simplistic correlation. We say that, you know, oh, we did yajna, so rains came. You know, actually, there's a profound philosophical principle over there. That yajna means that we are expressing our harmony with the universal government. And then the government is rewarding us by reciprocating or rewarding the citizens of the universe by providing rains. But you know, we should not simplistically misrepresent the philosophy. If I say, oh, because we did yajna, so rains came, then tomorrow a lot of rains will come, some atheists will say, you're doing too much kirtan now, stop the kirtan. Isn't it? So, we have to be very careful when we correlate God with the actions of this world. It's not that God is directly to be blamed for the actions of this world. Either way, this way. So now, just as God is beyond, even the soul is actually beyond. Soul is beyond, as we know, Prakriti Kriyamanani, that verse 3.27 indicates that actually the modes are doing everything. The modes are doing everything, the soul is simply misidentifying with the modes. That is the instruction that Swayambhu Manu gives to Dhruva Maharaj when he is trying to pacify him. When Dhruva is very angry and he is killing the yakshas en masse, so he stops and then Swayambhu Manu comes along and then he instructs him. He says, actually, neither that yaksha was the killer of your brother and nor are you actually the killer of the yakshas. But everything is happening by the modes. But when the modes influence a person, that atma becomes entangled. So understand that you are the atma which is beyond all these things. So depending on the context, in the 9th chapter the focus is bhakti. And that's why Krishna is focusing on his connection with everything. And he is helping us to see. So as devotees, we can see, yes, when the rains come, we can say it is Krishna's mercy. And when the rains don't come, we can also say, yes, this is Krishna giving us realization of how miserable this world is. Srila Prabhupada, when the bombs were falling on Calcutta, he said, oh, this is Krishna has come. But in a form that is not very congenial for most people, not very appealing for most people. So as devotees, we can see everything connected with Krishna. And that is good. At the same time, that doesn't mean that there is not a proper philosophical understanding of God's connection with this world. So in the jnana path, the devotional connection is not stressed. Rather, the philosophical disconnection between matter and spirit is stressed. And that's why here it is said that asattanna saduchyate, that this Brahma is beyond the cause and effect of this world. So what does this refer to? Generally, our acharyas have said this Brahma refers to the Atma. So the Atma is beyond the cause and effect of this world. Whatever happens, the Atma remains unaffected. The only reason why the Atma becomes bound is because of the illusory misidentification. But even now, the Atma is actually pure. It's only that there are some misconceptions that are covering it. Now, one of the characteristics of this section, 13.13 to 19, is that it's open to multiple interpretations. This is an Upanishadic section. Upanishadic means that there are very terse, sutra-like statements which pack a lot of meaning, But unpacking of that meaning can be done in various ways. Like we have in the, we will see the, like we have in the issue of Nishit, Tadejati, Tannaijati, Taddure, Tadva Antike. So a paradox, so you remember earlier I talked about the difference between paradox and contradiction. Contradiction means two opposing statements. Paradox means what?
Seemingly opposite.
Yeah, seemingly opposite, but? Yeah, that way of, that the seeming opposites is a way of pointing to a deeper truth, drawing attention to a deeper truth. Yeah, patient but enthusiastic, yes. So this is Taddure Tadvantike, this is far away and yet close. So that we'll discuss these verses. But in general, I'll not go into the technicalities of which acharyas have talked about what meanings of the verses. We'll just focus on the flow of the Gita. And we'll try to understand what is being talked about. Now, Srila Prabhupada explains, therefore, the description of Brahman mentioned in this verse is in relation to the individual soul. And when the Brahma word Brahman is applied to the living entity, it is to be understood that he is Vijnana Brahma as opposed to Ananda Brahma. So, this is one point I didn't discuss earlier about the different koshas. Have we discussed the koshas any time in our Upanishad, in our Ishopanishad? Tannamay kosh, pranamay kosh? No. Yeah. So, this is the word kosha. This is talked about in the Upanishads. Now, what is a kosha? It is a. There are two ways of looking at it. The objective level of God's energy, and it is also a subjective level of individual realization. So, what does this mean? Before I go into the five levels, let's try to understand what these two words, objective level of God's energy and subjective level of individual realization. So a simple example for this could be the concept of nationhood. Say, now I am an Indian. There is an objective fact that I am an Indian. Now I may have a domicile certificate, I may have an ID proof which says that I am an Indian. But there may not be the subjective level of understanding by which I understand that I am an Indian. For example, if there is a 6-month old baby, that baby is born in India and the baby is an Indian, but it just doesn't have the level of consciousness to understand that I am an Indian. It is in India, but is not an Indian in the sense that it doesn't consider itself to be an Indian. Or consider a dog in the streets of Mumbai. You know, it's also an Indian. It's also Bharatvasi. But it will not say, Garav se kaho hum Bharatvasi hai. It just doesn't have the level of consciousness developed to understand that it is an Indian. So, there is the objective fact that there is a certain connection with one's surroundings. And that level of connection indicates a certain objective reality. Somebody who is visiting India may be a tourist. That person is geographically in India. There is a certain level of actual reality to that. But that itself doesn't mean that that person thinks that I am an Indian. So geographically, a tourist in India is situated in the same way as is an Indian citizen. But consciousness-wise, there is a difference. So similarly, so I give three examples. Somebody who is an Indian, somebody who is a baby or a non-human species, and somebody who is a human with adequate intelligence but with a temporary visitor. So the subjective conceptions will vary despite the objective reality. Similarly, these five koshas are objective levels of Krishna's energies. So, but the people who are in that level, they may or may not have those kind of conceptions. Now, what are these conceptions? Nationhood is both a conception as well as objective reality. So, annamaya kosha means, maya means generally filled with, permeated with. So, annamaya kosha is the level of consciousness where one's existence is defined by eating. Annamaya kosha. For example, there are certain microscopic organisms like, say, amoeba. You know, actually, as soon as they interact with something, they will try to expand their shape and they will try to ingest it. Or if you look at small babies, you know, often they perceive the world through their tongue, isn't it? And that's why they may eat, they may just chew on their finger. And even when some people grow up, still they have that habit of chewing on their fingers. So what has happened is that at that level of childhood, the interaction with the world is primarily through the tongue, through eating. And there is no discrimination, there is not even a sense of self-existence, very clearly speaking. In the sense that the child may eat something which is harmful also. The child doesn't understand also that I am a separate being and I have to survive. Sometimes sometimes small babies, they may pass the waste product and then they may try to consume that also. Because they just don't have any sense of discrimination. Not just discrimination in terms of aesthetic or things like that, but even in terms of what is favorable for survival. They may eat something which is harmful, which may be poisonous also, if that's just in their vicinity. So, annamaya kosha means one is just filled with thoughts of eating. So, the higher level kosha is pranamaya. So here, one's existence is defined by survival. One thing that I have prana and I have to survive. What do I need to do to survive? And actually, this is the level of consciousness of most species. And Darwin's theory of evolution, some of it, especially the part of survival of the fittest, that is a valid truth within nature. The idea of adaptation leading to various species being morphed from one original source, that doesn't have adequate evidential or theoretical basis. But the idea of survival of the fittest is a fair enough principle. So living beings are defined largely by the urge to live. Pranamaya. Now, at the level of pranamaya, the anna is a concern. See, when one goes to each of these, as we go lower in this, it's a higher level of consciousness. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So at pranamaya also one eats. But eating is not the defining activity of one's existence. Eating is one activity, important activity. But eating is subordinated to other activities. So a deer may be eating grass, but when it sees that a lion is coming behind it and it hears the roar of a lion or smells the body of a lion nearby, it immediately leaves the food and runs away. Because for it at that level, prana is higher than anna. Now beyond this, actually, jnana, vijnana and ananda, these three my koshas, these three are possible only in the human form of life. Now, in the human form also, anna and prana are important concerns. Now, people say roti, kapda, makan. Now, these are important concerns. And they cannot be neglected. But at the same time, they don't have to be the defining conceptions of a person's life. If they are, then there are so many people who have roti, kapda, makan and still they are depressed. Still they often commit suicide or get into addictions. So these don't necessarily lead to fulfillment in human life. Because in human life, the consciousness is more developed and one wants something higher. So jnanamaya kosha means one starts developing knowledge. And in that knowledge, now sometimes the words are slightly different. This is sometimes referred to as manomaya kosha also. So at this level, one starts pursuing knowledge for knowledge's sake. And at this level, one may develop poetry, literature, fine arts. And why? Because this is basically one is trying to what is the idea of fine arts? Fine arts is where we try to depict something so that we can capture something that has inspired us in nature and preserve a portrait of it in some way. Literature also is it an attempt to muse over what is there in nature and to share it with others. So these are basically characteristics of the mode of goodness. So basically, now this is a rough correlation because, you know, these are different typologies. Typologies mean systems of classification. And we cannot correlate them accurately. But roughly speaking, Annamaya Kosha is largely in the mode of ignorance. Pranamaya Kosha is largely in the mode of passion. And Jnanamaya Kosha is in the mode of goodness. And Vijnana and Ananda, these are transcendental. Vijnana is roughly spiritual. And Anandamaya is devotion. Spiritual means just beyond the mode, at the level of Atma. And devotional means at the understanding of the relationship between the Atma and Paramatma. So, now in this Vijnanamaya Kosh, so in the Jnanamaya Kosh, one starts doing the pursuit of higher knowledge, but this need not necessarily be metaphysical. See, metaphysical means that there is physical and there is metaphysical. So physical means about the world around us. Metaphysical means what is beyond the world, what is beyond the sensory reality. So poetry, artistry, and literary inclinations, these can become ways to go towards metaphysics, but they don't necessarily have to be about metaphysics. You know, so many works of art may just be mundane. They may be depicting mundane themes. Literature, books, poems, paintings. But still, it requires some level of evolved understanding to do these sort of creations. So, at the Vijnanamaya Kosha, one starts understanding that actually there is a metaphysical reality and I belong there. This is to some extent the Jnani level. And when one goes further beyond that to the Anandamaya level, one understands that actually I am the Atma and I have an eternal relationship with this Paramatma and we are eternally reciprocating, and in that there is the highest happiness. That is where one experiences the highest happiness. So the Anandamaya Abhyasa, that is it. So actually, Abhyasa, by practice one attains the Anandamaya stage. So the Anandamaya stage is the goal of existence. And actually, even at the Annamaya and Pranamaya levels, one is trying for Ananda. One thinks that by survival, that survival itself is the greatest joy. The life is so important, let me do anything and everything to pursue, to preserve my life. But we will see there are great seekers, there may be saints or spiritually minded people, who may, for the sake of, say, Vijnana and Ananda, they may risk their prana. They may leave the comforts of daily life and they go into the forest, they go out in search of God. The purpose is that they want something higher in life. So, Athato Brahma Jigyasa actually is a call to rise from the Anna and Pranamaya Kosha to through the Jnana towards the Vijnana and Anandamaya Kosha. So, Prabhupada explains that for most people, the Brahma Jigyasa begins with Sangha. It begins with association. Actually, this verse, this sutra, Athato Brahma Jigyasa, Ramanujacharya and his Sri Bhashya use 100-page purport. A huge purport. Even Madhvacharya's purport is used. And what is the analysis that he is doing basically? He says, that both of them agree that Brahma Jigyasa is extremely auspicious. That as soon as the soul starts doing spiritual inquiry, that is the womb of great auspiciousness. But then what causes this auspiciousness? What makes a soul do Brahma Jigyasa? Is it that just one day you sit and start thinking, oh, where did I come from? Now that will just offer, that sort of thinking is often armchair speculation. Yeah, okay, where did I come from? Anyway, suddenly somebody knocks on the door. Hey, where have you come from? Let's sit and talk. You know, the subject suddenly comes down from mundane to from spiritual to mundane, and people start chit-chatting about gossip. I had gone here, I had gone there, and it just comes from. So where does this Brahma Jigyasa come from? So they all trace a constellation of factors, but the primary factor they say is actually it is by association of those who are having Brahma Jigyasa. So it can be by the mercy of the Lord. If somebody has pursued some Brahma Jigyasa in the past, then one develops Brahma Jigyasa. And then one continues the Brahma Jigyasa in this life, or it can just be some special mercy of the Lord by which something awakens in this life. Generally, that mercy, that sudden awakening, is just a restarting of what one had cultivated in the previous life. But sometime it has to start in a previous life or this life, and that starting generally happens by the association of devotees. So this sort of rising towards the higher koshas is through Sangha. Now Sangha need not necessarily be of devotees. Sangha has to be of those whose Brahma Jigyasa has been awakened. So it can be Jnanis also, it can be Yogis also, it can be any kind of transcendentalist. And Prabhupada writes that in the purport of that section 6.37 to 45, when he's talking about how the deviated yogi continues in the next life. So there he describes that all those who are pursuing an eternal goal are on the auspicious path. So this, I think he writes in 6.40 purport, where Krishna is saying that Kalyanakrut means one who is doing auspicious work. So Prabhupada explains, what is auspicious work? Pursuing anything beyond this world is auspicious, because this world is a place of misery. And even if one doesn't have a clear conception of what to pursue, what to look for, but still just looking beyond the world is auspicious. Any questions about the koshas? Jnana, Vijnana and Ananda. Yeah. See, Jnana kosha is basically the level of, as I said, the fine arts, the literary arts. Now, the subjects can be anything. They are just generally some stirrings towards something higher. So the admiration of the beauty of nature, and the more subtle thoughts. Whereas Vijnan is clearly one has reached the Atma level. So in a sense, you know, in the Jnana level is also called often as the Manomaya level. And at that level, basically one has become conscious of one's mental life. One has become conscious, okay, there is a life of the mind. Now by the mind, the word mind, I don't use it in the sense of the what we call as the mind generally. The mind which troubles us, the mind which is filled with material desires. But we use the word mind also in the sense that, you know, sometimes there may be a book, The 100 Greatest Minds of the 20th Century. So mind refers to, it refers to what here? It's people who have a developed intellect, who are thinking, who are rich in thoughts. So in that sense, when we talk about the one who becomes aware of the life of the mind and starts pursuing that life of the mind, that is the Jnanamaya Kosha. So actually, another way to look at this is, first two are basically at the level of the gross body. Jnanamaya comes to the level of the subtle body. Vijnanamaya is at the level of the Atma. And Anandamaya is at the level of the connection between the Atma and the Paramatma. Is it clear? Any other questions about this? Yeah. Yeah, actually, there is a stable level in the sense that everybody will have some bodily concerns at some time. Even an advanced devotee, that devotee may also feel hunger. That devotee may also, if when Prabhupada is a pure devotee, when Prabhupada was attacked by at the Bowery, he fled from the place of where David was there. But that is not Pranamaya level of consciousness. So when there is a threat at the level of the body, one may respond accordingly. But the important thing is, what does one conceive to be the defining aspect of one's life? What does one conceive to be one's purpose? That is what needs to be seen. That's what defines this. Okay, I'll just quickly summarize here. So Pranamaya is mostly animals. And this is mode of ignorance. This is mode of passion. this is mode of goodness. And that is Vijnanamaya. So this is Jnanis. Come to the level of the soul. Spiritual level. And Anandamaya is Bhaktas. They are at the level of Paramatma or Bhagavan, perceived God, and it's a devotional level. Forward now. So this is, so Prabhupada says that when the Atma is at the level of Nasattannasaduchyate, when the Atma has understood that actually I have got nothing to do with this material world, so that time that Atma has gone beyond all these levels and has actually come to the Anandamaya level. So even at the Vijnanamaya level, there is some understanding that okay, I am beyond this material world. But still, the identity of the Atma is understood more by its negation of material attributes than by its independent self attributes. The Atma is defined, okay, I am not this, I am not this, I am not this. But what am I? That is not clearly understood. That's why Prabhupada said that the proper understanding of this Vijnanam, of this Nasattannasaduchyate, will happen when one is at the Anandamaya level. Okay. So let's move forward. Now from here onwards, the Acharyas describe that the next, all the verses are talking about the Paramatma. So now the Gyaya, the object of knowledge. What is the object of knowledge? Actually, ultimately what we want to know is our own identity and God. Mm-hmm. So Brahma Jigyasa, Brahma has two levels. You know, Brahma can also mean Atma. Aham Brahmasmi is there. And Brahma is also Param Brahma, the absolute truth. So in the section on Gyaya, the Atma is talked about briefly in a half a verse, and the Paramatma is talked about in the remaining verses. Sarvata Pani Padam Tat Sarvatokshishiromukham Sarvatokshishiromukham Sarvatah Shrutimalloke Shrutimalloke Sarvamavritya Tishthati. So Sarvatah Pani Padam Tat. Pani and Pada is hands and legs. And Sarvataha Kshiro Akshishiro Mukham. So Akshi is eyes, Shiro is head, and Mukha is mouth. And then, so Pani Pada actually refers to some extent to the Karmendriyas. Akshishiro Mukham, Shrutimalloke, these refers to the Gyanendriyas. Roughly. And Sarvamavritti Tishtati is pervading everywhere. So basically, the point here is that the Lord knows everything and the Lord can do whatever He wants, wherever He wants. That's the point of this verse. So now this verse in and of itself doesn't say what it is. Tat. What is that tat? That is not made very clear in the verse itself. That's why we need the Acharyas. Later on we'll see how the Bhagavad Gita makes it clear in the future verses. But at this stage, by the attributes, we can understand that this isn't referred to the Atma. Because the Atma, surely we don't have our hands and legs everywhere. Our hands and legs are only connected with our body. This is also another way of looking at the difference between the two Kshetrajnas. Yeah. So, yeah, that's the problem. So, the question is that we said that the previous verse is referring to Atma and this verse is not referring to the Atma. So, there's no continuity or connection. Yeah, so now I don't want to go into an elaborate analysis. This is the reason why some acharyas say even the previous verse does not refer to the Atma. They say that it also refers to the absolute truth. And here it refers to the Brahma Jyoti aspect of the absolute truth. Anadi Mat Param Brahma. So Brahma Jyoti is subordinate to me. That Krishna will make Brahmano hi Pratishtaham. That's what he says. So that way the continuity is maintained, and the full Gyan that Krishna talks about is the absolute truth only. Is absolute truth. Bhagwan, Paramatma, whatever, Brahman. So that's another way of looking at it. And it's also logical in the sense that at this level, Krishna has already explained the Atma in the second chapter itself. So now the focus is more on the absolute truth. So that's one way of looking at it. And some of our acharyas have done it that way also. Srila Prabhupada takes this verse refers to Atma. And that's why I focused on that explanation. So now as far as the transition is concerned, it is especially in the Upanishads. Generally the characteristic is that as I told you in the Vedanta Sutra, just the discussion starts off without even giving the context. Brahma refers to Prakriti or Bhagwan. Brahma refers to what is? Now, what is Brahma? Okay, actually that word Brahma is used in a particular conversation in Shveta Shatra Upanishad. What does it refer to? So it doesn't give the context also. So Vedanta Sutra is like that in a very, very complex way. Upanishads are not so complex. But generally, the transitions of thought are assumed to be understood for the audience which is at a particular level of refinement. So that's why the Upanishads become a little difficult to understand. So it's like, when a lot of things are there on a person's mind and the person starts speaking. Two people, they are very learned and they are having some discussions and they have a lot of things on their mind. So when they start discussing, both of them understand what is being spoken. And when they change from one subject to another, see, their goal when they are having discussion is not primarily to enlighten everyone else. Their goal is just to have a discussion mutually. So Upanishads to some extent are like that. They are the mode of discussion between people who are very, very elevated in their understanding. And there may be some places where they are enlightening others also. But even those whom they are enlightening are also of a very evolved consciousness. So that's why in the Upanishads, the thought does not seem to be very linear and cursive. It seems to be more of intuitive and spontaneous, going from one level to another. So in one sense, it's like the Upanishads offer us vignettes of peaks of conscious insight. Vignettes means like pictures, portraits. Vignettes of what? Peaks of conscious insight. That means when a person is thinking and in the consciousness he gets some insight. So that insight, you take a picture of it. So when the insight, our level of insights also sometimes go up, come down, we sometimes understand something, sometimes don't understand something. So when the level of conscious insight has come to a peak, we take a picture of that. And then sort of make a frame of it and preserve it. So here the picture is made in text and it is preserved. So now unless we know the context, now I might just see a picture, okay, this looks beautiful, but what is it, where is it, who clicked the picture, why it is clicked, what am I supposed to learn from this picture? We don't understand all that just by seeing a picture. We need somebody to explain that to us. There is also saying that one picture is like 1,000 words. That may be true, but often one picture needs 1,000 words to explain also. Because if there's only a picture, from one picture people can come up with 1,000 explanations. See, even words can be multiply interpreted, but words at least are normally in a linear progressive context. But pictures are often decontextualized. So to actually understand and explain pictures, we need proper verbal exposition. So these are like, as I said, peaks of consciousness. These are not pictures in a visual sense. They are pictures in a textual sense. But the Upanishads, what they offer, that's why it is a Vedeshu Durlabham Adurlabham Atma Bhakto. So they are offering just level peaks, snapshots or vignettes of peaks of conscious insight. And they are difficult to understand. So that's why the progression in these verses will be a little difficult. But it will become a little bit more, later we'll see how it becomes clear that actually two entities are being talked about. It will become clear in 22-23. So now let's move forward. 15th verse. Sarvendriya guna abhasam. Indriya guna abhasam. Sarvendriya vivarjitam. Sarvendriya vivarjitam. Asaktam sarva bhruk jaiva. Tam sarva bhruk jaiva. Nirgunam guna bhoktrucha. Nirgunam guna bhoktrucha. So sarvendriya guna abhasam. So abhasa is refers to the original source. So is the source of all senses, that thing, whatever it is, not mentioned clear. Sarvendriya vivarjitam, it is having no senses by itself. So here we see a direct paradox. First of all, to say that it is a source of something and it itself doesn't have that thing, that is a paradox. But the greater paradox is what was said in the previous verse. Actually, it says everywhere are his hands and legs. Now Prabhupada uses the personal pronoun his over there. But there is no personal pronoun over there. That is there in the Sanskrit. In the previous verse. So, but the previous verse is everywhere are the hands and legs, and now they're saying that it has no senses. That means no hands and legs also. So what is going on over here? Sarvendriya vivarjitam. So actually, it is talking about different levels of things. See, when we are in the material world, we understand that when the previous verse said, the connection between previous verse and this verse is that, can the kitchen door be closed? If the soul is not the doer of anything, nasattanasa, soul doesn't have anything to do with anything, then how are things happening in this world? Now I am seeing, I am speaking. So things are happening. So he says that is happening by the instrumentality of the super soul. That means actually the material nature is the doer, the material nature is being acting through the will, by the will of the Supreme Lord. So Supreme Lord is acting. So the Paramatma is everywhere and the Paramatma is acting. So that in that sense, all the indriyas of all the living beings belong to the Paramatma. So Prabhupada gives this in a Bhagavatam purport, this particular explanation, that in a sense the Lord's agents are everywhere. Because the Lord can act through everyone, not just through his devotees. He can act even through non-devotees also. Non-devotees can also be made to do God's will. Not necessarily they do it in a willing way, but just like Govindarupa was telling on Sunday that Prabhupada would quote that how when there's a fight between two countries, you know, it's the Second World War between America, between the Allies and Axis power. So it's ultimately the Lord engaging both of them to bring their own karmic reactions upon them. So in an ultimate sense, Krishna is the doer. So it is in that sense, Sarvata Panipadam, Sarvata Krishiromukham. But then, just to make this point clear, that actually, that absolute truth cannot be blamed for what happens in this world. The point is immediately made that Sarvendriya Vivarjitam. He is the source of all the indriyas, but he himself does not have any indriyas. So here when it is talking about Sarvendriya Vivarjitam, it's primarily talked about that's absolute truth not having any material senses. And asaktam sarva bhruk jaiva. Again, there is a contradiction that asaktam is unattached, but he maintains everyone. Normally, we maintain parents maintain the children because there is some attachment towards them. This theme, asaktam sarva bhruk jaiva, was talked about in 9th chapter also. When it is said that bhuta bhrinnacha bhuta sthomama atma bhuta bhavana in 9.5. And nirgunam guna bhoktrucha. He is beyond the modes, but he is the law controller of the modes also. So basically, these verses very clearly, they are the clearest statement within the Bhagavad Gita of the Achintya Bheda Vaitattva. There is an earlier statement in 9.4 and 5, where Matsthani Sarabhutani, Machvasthani Bhutani. But here it is much more clear. Let's look at this further. I'll explain these as we move forward, and then I'll give a cumulative understanding at the end. Bahirantascha bhutanam, bahirantascha bhutanam, acharam charamevacha, acharam charamevacha, sukshmatvat tadavigyayam, matvat tadavigyayam, durastham chantike chatat, stham chantike chatat. So, bahirantascha bhutanam, that thing, whatever it is, inside and outside of everyone. And it is, who are the everyone? It includes moving and non-moving beings. And then you may say that, oh, he's the everywhere. Then, inside and outside, then why don't we know him? Sukshmatva. It's extremely minute. And it's interesting that Krishna says it's so minute, that's why he's avigyayam. The section started by describing the gyaya. So Krishna now says that the gyaya is avigyaya. The object to be known is unknowable. Of course, unknowable to normal perception. By a proper process it can be known. And he further says, durastham chantike chatat. So now what does this refer to? Bahir antasya bhutanam. Now the absolute truth is present inside everyone as a super soul. That absolute truth is present outside everyone as the all-pervading Brahma Jyoti. There can be various explanations for this. Similarly, durastham chantike chatat. He's closer than the closest. As the Paramatma expansion, he's there right next to us. As Bhagavan expansion, as the Bhagavan manifestation, he is far away in the spiritual world. Durastham chantike chatat. Now beyond that, Krishna will tell further that now this verse specifically focuses on the Paramatma and describes how that one Paramatma appears many. Avibhaktam cha bhuteshu, avibhaktam cha bhuteshu, vibhaktam iva cha sthitam, vibhaktam iva cha sthitam, bhuta bhartru cha tajgeyam, bhuta bhartru cha tajgeyam, grasishnu prabhavishnu cha, grasishnu prabhavishnu cha. So avibhaktam, avibhakta means to be divided. So avibhaktam cha bhuteshu, among all living beings, that absolute truth is not divided. But vibhaktam iva cha sthitam is situated as if divided. So what does this refer to? Just like there is a sun in the sky and there are many ponds on the earth. So the sun gets reflected in each of the ponds. So each reflection seems to be different, but it is the same sun which is reflected. So in a similar way, the super soul is one. You may have seen that picture. But there's one super soul, and then that super soul is manifested in various living beings, in their heart. So, and the yogi is meditating on that. So vibhaktam ivachastitam is only an expansion. And then bhuta bhartru chatajgeyam. Now here Krishna is telling that actually that absolute truth. See, even in the jnani path, at a later level, initially one differentiates between matter and spirit. But eventually one tries to see how actually matter is an illusion and everything that is there is a spirit only. That's the mood of verses like Sarvam Kalmamidam Brahma, which Shankaracharya called the Mahavakya. That everything is Brahman. So in that light, what is being said over here is that absolute truth is the maintainer, is the creator and the destroyer. Bhuta Bhartru, he is the maintainer, and Grashishnu, Grashishnu means the devourer, and Prabhavishnu means the creator. So he is doing all these three things. So in a sense, we understand that although Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh are considered to be in charge of all these three, but ultimately all three get their power from the absolute truth who is beyond, and the absolute truth is Krishna, Grashishnu, Prabhavishnu cha. Now Krishna will explain further characteristic of this. Jyotisham apita jyotis, jyotisham apita jyotis, tamasah paramuchyate, tamasah paramuchyate, jnanam jnayam jnanagamyam, jnanam jnayam jnanagamyam, hruti sarvasya vishtitam, vishtitam. So here, hruti sarvasya vishtitam, this makes something very clear. That absolute truth is present everywhere, in all hearts. So we are not present in all hearts. So in that sense, we can say this is referring to the super soul. It will become more clear in 22-23. Jyotisham apita jyotis. He says that absolute truth is the light of all lights. All illumination comes from him. And he is situated forever beyond the darkness of material existence. Tamasah paramuchyati. And now these three words are interesting. Jnanam, jnayam, jnanagamyam. So jnana is knowledge. Jnaya is the object of knowledge. And jnanagamya is the goal of knowledge. To be approached by knowledge. So, what is the difference between this, the object of knowledge and the goal of knowledge? In a sense, they may appear similar. He is knowledge, he is the object of knowledge, he is the goal of knowledge. However, there is a difference. If a person is in a jail, and a person wants to get out of the jail, so at that time, the person will study the jail very carefully. Okay, where can I dig a hole in it? Where is the lock weak? When are the guards not there? Where is the best escape route from it? So for the person in the jail, the object of knowledge is the jail itself. But the goal of knowledge is not the jail. the goal of knowledge is freedom that lies beyond the jail. So, you understand this difference between the object of knowledge and goal of knowledge. I study one thing so that I can get something else. For example, when there is some terrible disease, say for example, now there is AIDS. Now, researchers may do a lot of research to understand, okay, where does this HIV originate from and what causes the disease? How does it work? So, when I study, the object of my knowledge at that time will be the HIV and its behavior. But the goal of my knowledge is a state of life which is free from HIV. Isn't it? So, exactly. So, now in Gyanis, now we'll come to this point. That in the Gyanis case, they may you study in a sense bhakti or Bhagwan, but they think actually beyond that is the Brahman, and we have to go there. Whereas Krishna is telling over here that ultimately I am all three. When he says I am knowledge, what does this refer to? This can refer to two different things. Now earlier in this chapter, Krishna has said jnana is referring to the process by which knowledge is developed. And Krishna is saying, I am that process. That actually, that process which liberates you from material existence, that process by which you gain that knowledge, I am that. Another point could be, as Krishna will say later in 15.15, Mattah smritir jnanam apohanam cha. So the jnana that you get is my mercy. That is also another way of looking at it. Now, for us as devotees, in a sense, our object of knowledge is Krishna and our goal of knowledge also is Krishna. But for materialistic people, for scientists, for example, you know, their object of knowledge is the material world. But what is the goal of knowledge? They actually don't know any further goal of knowledge. They think that, okay, the goal of knowledge is just, I want to be happy here only. Which we can't be, because this material world is condemned with temporariness. So, there is this vision of oneness, not in the sense of absolute oneness, but in oneness in terms of the principle that is sustaining everything. So all the aspects of knowledge, what I study, how I get to study it, and what I achieve by studying, all these three are sustained by Krishna's mercy. So what I study refers to Jnanam. How I study refers to Jnana. And what I get by studying is Jnana Gamya. All this is sustained by Krishna. Let's move forward. Iti kshetram tatha jnanam. Jnanam choktam samasataha. Choktam samasataha. Madbhakta etad vijnaya. Etad vijnaya. Madbhavayopapadyate. Madbhavayopapadyate. So here Krishna concludes this section by describing to Arjuna what all he has taught. Iti kshetram. I have told you about kshetra, I have told you about jnana, and I have told you about jnaya. So now actually Krishna has told about kshetrajna also. But kshetrajna and jnaya are more or less similar. The kshetrajna are the Atma and Paramatma, and the jnaya is also Atma and Paramatma. So Krishna doesn't repeat that. That they are two are similar. Iti kshetra, so these three, so kshetra we remember we talked about in the beginning of the chapter. Actually verses 2 to 7 is talking about kshetra. Jnana is 8 to 12. And then jnaya is 13 to 18. And very significantly, Krishna says, who can understand this? Mat bhakta etad vijnaya. So even in such a hardcore Upanishadic section, Krishna is emphasizing the point of bhakti over here. Who can understand it? Mad bhakta etad vijnaya. So this is the second reference to bhakti in this chapter. Which was the earlier reference? Mai chananya yogena bhakti ravya vicharen. 13.8 to 12. One of the characteristics of knowledge. Again he says mad bhakta etad vijnaya. And mad bhava yopapadyate. Mad bhava. So the word bhava can make mean nature or it can mean emotion. So they attain my nature. My nature also doesn't necessarily have to mean impersonal margin. It can just mean one attains spiritual nature. Or my emotion, that can mean they attain love for me. They attain emotions for me. So what that will actually mean, that will vary depending on the context. So Prabhupada, they attain to my nature. Madhbhava, he translates this. So even for understanding this jnana, actually bhakti is important. So even the jnanis have to practice bhakti to some extent by which they will understand this complex philosophical analysis. Now after this, from the next verse, Krishna will start talking about Purusha and Prakriti. We'll discuss this in the evening class. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. Itai Gaur Premanandi. Thank you very much.